This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Millions in the western U.S. face dangerous heat, with some cities enduring triple-digit temperatures for weeks. In Phoenix, Arizona,
it is miserable being outside unless you're in the water somehow.
Today, a record-tying 18th straight day where temperatures topped 110 degrees. The outlook? Brutal. Arizona's power grid is meeting demand even as residents set a new record for electricity use.
That's CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti. Demand for power in Texas hit a record high today. A flash flood swamped a southeastern Pennsylvania road late Saturday afternoon, sweeping several cars away and claiming five lives. Search crews and drones are being used to find two children. CBS's Lana Zak.
A frantic search continues in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, after rushing flash floods turned roads into rapids. The vehicle of the Shells family was overcome by floodwaters, and in a moment of terror, the family abandoned the vehicle. The husband, four-year-old son, and grandmother survived, but the body of mother, Katie Seeley, was found by search teams, while two-year-old Maddie and nine-month-old Conrad are still missing.
In the Gilgo Beach murders investigation, CBS's Elaine Cajano says the latest on the search of suspect Rex Huerman's home.
Police say they found over 200 guns in a vault in the basement of accused serial killer Rex Huerman's Long Island home, and are executing search warrants at multiple nearby storage facilities looking for more evidence or trophies from his alleged victims.
A CBS source confirms investigators have recovered a car in South Carolina linked to the suspect. Russia says it will not take part in another agreement to allow shipments of grain from Ukraine to other parts of the world. White House press House National Security spokesman John Kirby noting grains and food prices already have spiked.
The only other option you have for that is overland, by rail, by truck, overland. And of course, overland transport of anything in Ukraine right now is a pretty hazardous undertaking.
Widely anticipated options to protect babies from the respiratory virus known as RSV have been approved by the FDA. CBS's Alexander Tim.
This is the first new immunization to protect the youngest Americans from RSV, the leading cause of hospitalization in this age group, using only a single shot for the whole season. Nirsevimab works a little differently than a traditional vaccine. It's a so-called passive antibody drug that directly neutralizes the virus, cutting hospitalizations by 83% in one study of infants who got the injection.
The Powerball jackpot is above $900 million tonight. Michael Vance bought his tickets in Charlotte, North Carolina.
If I won the Powerball, I'd just pay off some bills and change my name and get missing for a while, honestly.
Stocks close up on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For 105.7 CFW and 93.5 FM The Tap, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. A woman was sentenced for killing a man in a head-on crash after driving the wrong way on I-94 near Hudson last October. 32-year-old Amber Lee Pospisil of Alexandria, Minnesota, will serve 15 years in prison with 10 years of extended supervision after pleading no contest to homicide by intoxicated use of a vehicle as part of a plea deal. Online court records show three other counts were dismissed but read in. Pospisil told investigators she'd been drinking at a wedding in Wisconsin and was driving to a hotel but didn't remember driving the wrong way on the interstate. Police found an empty bottle of vodka in her vehicle, according to court documents. The Wisconsin DNR is looking for help in finding stolen trout. The DNR said that someone stole rare brown trout from the St. Croix Falls State Fish Hatchery on June 19th. Anyone with information should call 1-800-TIP-WDNR. From the Civic Media News Desk in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to four messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about as we wrap up our time at Netroots Nation in Chicago. And look, it's been a really, really interesting couple of days and lots of feedback, lots of interesting comments. And look, this is an interesting crowd. It's not my crowd. And I've said this from the beginning. This is, you know, old straight white guy, not the crowd here, not the center of attention. And that's okay, because look, at the end of it, this is how we build communities. Everybody included, everybody okay being in part of that community and accepting difference. And this is what I've said for a very long time. I may not agree with some of the clothing choices or some of the things that go on. But at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. You have the right to do what it is that you want to do. And as long as your rights don't infringe on mine, we're golden. And this is that place. There are some who are pushing the bounds of you know, what I would call sane and rational. But still, good on them. And I have no problems whatsoever with people living their lives. Now, I did get some interesting comments from folks about why we would cover such an event. You know, why is it that you're in a place of, the fringe of the left? And the reality is I come to these places because I think it's important to communicate with everyone. And in this space especially, because I do have some differences. There are some places where I go, that's a bit too far for me. And you should be okay with me going, that's a bit too far for me. You should not be canceling people. You should not be going through all of this, everyone being offended. Because what I've noticed, and this is this moment, I've noticed we're way too offendable as a society. And I've said this 1,000 times here on the show that I'm not someone who's ever been offended by something someone has told me or said to me. Maybe it's my age. Maybe it's how I grew up. You know, who knows? Maybe it was that, you know, we spent all of our time making fun of each other and ripping each other, especially on our weaknesses and our differences, that I don't have this thing in me that goes, oh, I can't believe you did that. I've been mad at people when they've said something and then I will respond to it. But I've never, you know, walked away offended and you know, all of that. And it happened a couple of times while we were in these spaces where there are people who, you know, may have been inarticulate in what they were expressing or may have just said, look, I don't agree with you, that then turned into moments of, you know, everyone camping up. And I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake, especially for the people who preach tolerance, to be intolerant. I think it's a huge mistake
to put yourself in a position where you're always right and everyone else has got to conform. And look, it's one of these, for me, as the old straight white guy in the room, it's one of these things where you go, I don't agree with everything that you do or everything that you believe, but you have the right to do it. That should be enough. You're never going to see me out parading or marching in the streets on a lot of these issues, but you have the right. And this is where, as a country, we've got to get off of the sidewalks. We've got to stop throwing bombs at each other and being offended with what others are saying without actually understanding what the other person is trying to say. Now, look, if you've got people who are truly, you know, trying to be racist or they truly are, you know, white nationalists, you know, misogynistic and all of that stuff, then, yeah, you deal with that. But in a moment where you're going, yeah, well, you're somewhat on the same page, you're somewhere in the same ballpark, you're between the curbs, if you will. I'm sorry, I'm not in the place where you blow up in offense. And, you know, I heard the word safe space, which drives me crazy because, understand, there are no safe spaces. There never have been. There never will be. When we were a kid playing tag, you know, home base was as close to safe space, but it wasn't because someone always knocked you off. This should be a learning experience. And for me, going to these places, having conversations with people who, you know what, I'm not in 100% agreement with, is a good thing. Just like I've gone to CPAC in the past, I've gone to right-wing spaces and had conversations where we may not agree. That's okay. But this this blowing up and throwing up our hands and all of that has got to stop at some point. The only way we move this country forward, especially in the working class, is understand that there's more that we agree on than we don't. And this, again, I keep coming back to when I'm in these spaces, I talk about the fact that being a union guy, being someone who believes we can reunite this country by organizing workplaces and fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for working people to take care of their families, this is the space that I think we need to bring all this together. And I think we can. And we have in the past. So for me, out of this, and what we're going to talk about over the next 2 hours is, you know, how do we take back our political system in a way that is going to encourage better wages, hours, opportunities for working people? How do we you know, take what came out of Netroots, out of, you know, the organizing and all the groups and all the people who have their issues and melding them into something that electorally is going to bring sanity to our politics? And, you know, also, you know, how do we save institutions, you know, education, the environment? How do we leave something for our kids? And you've heard me say this a bunch of times. How do we leave a planet that's worthy of being inherited? So all of that, you know, we're going to get to today. I hope you've enjoyed our coverage thus far of the Netroots Nation event. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts. A lot of folks have chimed in, and I really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Illinois Representative Jan Schakowsky is going to be here to share some thoughts on how do we fix our politics and what her thoughts are the big Netroots Nation powwow. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. The Teamster members of Local 574 in Minneapolis were back out on strike. Their strike had begun 2 months prior on May 16th. The striking Teamsters had effectively shut down much of the commercial transportation in the city. One exception was made for some farmers, who were allowed to bring their produce to market. The powerful Citizens Alliance, created to oppose and destroy unions, tried to defeat the strike. The police clashed violently with the strikers, who tried to keep scab drivers from breaking through their picket lines. As the strike entered its second week, other unions began to strike in support of the Teamsters. Clashes between the police and workers intensified. Minneapolis labor leaders sat down with the police and proposed a truce. The governor of Minnesota, Floyd Olson, helped to arbitrate an agreement. The Teamsters won union recognition and the right for all strikers to return to work, as well as a system of recognizing seniority. On May 25th, they called off the strike and went back to work. But soon the employers began to backpedal on the agreement. They claimed that the negotiations did not include the workers inside warehouses and only covered those who drove and unloaded vehicles. Angered, the Teamsters went back out on strike. Soon, violent clashes between the picketers and police broke out again. Two workers were shot in the back and killed. The governor declared martial law and sent in the National Guard to restore order. A federal mediator brokered another settlement, meeting the major demands of the union. It was a major victory for the Teamsters and a major victory for the workers of Minneapolis and beyond. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of the things you see here at NetRoots Nation, you get a lot of folks in the elected space coming through. Because look, at the end of the day, as we keep saying, all of these issues are important. All of the ideas coming out of here are important. But if they don't turn into electoral victories, if they don't turn into people in the halls of power understanding and moving the ball forward, it's not going to matter. And that's why I'm thrilled to see Jan Schakowsky, representative for the Chicago area here, who's been on our show a couple times over the years, come back and give us some thoughts. Jan, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm so happy to be with you. Thanks so much, Rick.
Now, you are truly one of the champions of working people. Labor issues we've talked about in the past. I believe in this space, labor is the glue that could pull all of this together, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. For me, that's the glue in all this.
So I am a dues paying every month to Workers United, which is right now going after Starbucks. I was at an action over last weekend. And the Starbucks near my house has fully joined the union. Now all they need is a contract, yeah, like Starbucks all over the country. But you're absolutely right. And the good news is there is a kind of renaissance now. The interest in forming unions has never been higher. At the National Labor Relations Board, a 58% increase in requests. But we also are seeing a larger number, not that high a percentage, of the infractions by the bosses,
right,
to try and stop that.
And this is where I talk about all the time, the antiquated, ossificated labor law that we have and the need for updates, the need for something new. The PRO Act, to me, is a good start. The Employee Free Choice Act was a step in the right direction that didn't happen. I mean, we can talk about lost opportunities, but in this room, getting these folks to vote on that issue, to me, I think is central to everything going on here.
Oh, and that means we have to win the elections. And then we have to move quickly, like the PRO Act, protecting our right to organize, should be right up at the front to be able to do that. But what I want to see is when we have the House and the Senate, and I feel really confident in the House of Representatives that we can win, and make sure that Joe Biden, who is probably more pro-labor than any other president that we've had
in my lifetime, and yeah, I say this all the time,
yeah,
I love Jelly Bucket Joe. I love the fact that he's out there doing the work, doing the work of rebuilding our infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing. And I think as the weeks and months to election time come back, I think we're going to see that stuff rolling out, and people are going to see how it's going to make their lives better. As I say, my true north is always, how are you going to make my life better? How are you going to help working people achieve those things that my grandparents' generation were able to do? One income, supporting a family, they could buy a house, a car, send their kids to college, retire with dignity. How do we do that again?
So, you know, Bidenomics to me means changing the calculus here, that it's not about the rich getting richer. It is about, and he talks about it, as the middle out and the bottom up. And I believe that we have seen the evidence, the legislation that has passed, and as you say, that's going to roll out. But the thing that we also have to make sure, that when there are these ribbon cuttings, and these Republicans want to show up,
yeah,
I want to see the billboard. I want to see the protesters out there saying, guess what? This congressman voted no. He voted no on the Inflation Reduction Act. He voted no on all these other things that we have gotten done for them. And he should not dare to put his face where he doesn't deserve the credit.
Like the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, Tommy Tuberville. The poster child for that. I mean, reality is they should be held accountable. But what I said from the beginning, the day that you got the infrastructure bill passed, I said, look, Biden's got to put his face and his name all over this. And my idea at the time was that stupid sticker they were putting on the gas pumps, take that, giant 20-foot cutouts, and put them at every workplace and say,
I would love that.
I did that. And take ownership of it, because Democrats do a really bad job of taking credit for the things that they do. For me, you got to get. I think Shapiro did an incredible job in Philadelphia, but he also said, look, go to the video, watch us doing this. That I think is important.
Well, you know, the other thing that sort of irritated me is we call it the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act.
Well, there are like five.
I think there were House and Senate, we may have had 13 Republicans,
right,
which was maybe a landmark number because they never vote with us. But when it comes to those ribbon cuttings, we have to call names. And I agree that we should get the information clearly out, not just the positive, not just that, you know, Joe Biden got it done, but here's the guy who tried to stop it.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And I hope that happens. And we do it here at the program, and I hope more of that happens. But in getting those jobs out, I mean, in getting those projects done, I think talking about the jobs and the reverberation effect and the fact that you're right. I think Joe is the most pro-union president in my lifetime, at
Me
least.
Too.
But making sure that we know that those are union jobs being created, and knowing that income is flowing through the economy, I think we need to be promoting this much more. Republicans have spent so much time and energy through their echo chamber, you know, you're saying it's all Biden inflation. I think we got to do a much better job of saying how we're fixing it.
I know, and boo-hoo for them. Yeah. Inflation is dropping.
Yeah. Except in Florida. Ugly. Except in Florida, where it's going through the roof.
Yeah.
And that's DeSantis and his ordeal
DeSantis,
there.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
You know, as I'm looking at this, and again, we're again heading into, you know, political season and this conference here being part of that.
Yes.
What's the message to the people here? I know you've been to these events in the past. When you see the folks here at Netroots, what message do you want them to take
My
out of
My message
this?
Is this is not rocket science. When it comes to the election, it's going to be turnout, turnout, turnout. We can do this. That we have to have each individual that comes here, considers themselves a progressive, has to have their plan or be part of a plan that is getting the vote out. We have every opportunity. Look, we have had some wins in the House of Representatives. That is a new redistricting in New York right now. There was even, believe it or not, a Supreme Court decision that may make some of the gerrymandering less opportune for the Republicans. We have the people on our side. They support our agenda. Do you know, if you ask without any, you just tell us off the cuff, what is the most that we could do for your family? You know what people say? Ask the rich to pay their fair share. So
not ask. I mean, this is where we're too soft. I'm not asking. It's about time we
make sure that
maybe we dig up the good socialist president Dwight David Eisenhower and his tax code from the 1950s that built a massive infrastructure in this country, that invested in education, that invested in the future of this country. Maybe we talk about it in demanding better.
Demanding. And the fact that, and Bernie Sanders pointed this out, there are three American families who have slightly more wealth than the bottom 50% of Americans.
Yeah.
There should be something illegal about that. You know,
there should be. There's somebody who could do something. Maybe there's somebody who's in the halls of power who could, I don't know, pass a law.
I mean, that some of these absolutely, totally rich guys pay no taxes. That should be illegal.
Yeah.
We have more income disparity in this country than any other industrialized nation.
Yeah.
And so... We can do this.
No.
And so my message is, be optimistic to everyone that we can win, that every single person, every single voter has an opportunity to be part of this victory. And then when we win, we move quickly to make the changes that people are waiting
yes.
for. Because, you know, it's not just about, during the break, I was with at two homeless shelters. I was at two food pantries, and I'm happy to help those people. But that we tolerate, in the richest country in the world, at the richest time in history, we tolerate homelessness and hunger, including child hunger. But it's not just that. I think the majority of Americans are close to, live on the edge. What happens if there's a healthcare crisis in my family? What if the car breaks down? What if I have a child with a disability? I'm in deep trouble here.
Yep.
And that's wrong in this richest country in the world. We can change that. And it's under Democrats that we've had better economies. And that's the thing that really pisses me off, is that the Republicans are, oh, you know, vote for Republicans. We know how to run the economy. Every time a Democrat has been in power, the economy has been better for ordinary people and worse when Republicans take over.
Well, what's the old Harry Truman quote? If you want to live like a Republican, vote for a Democrat?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Jan Schakowsky, Congresswoman here from the Chicago area. No, and what I want to ask you is, you know, being in Congress in this moment with Republicans in control and the sideshow that it's become, with Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie and the rest of them, how do you put up with that? I mean, how do you deal with the bread and circus kind of atmosphere that goes on there? Because look, I listen to you and I've talked to you in the past. You're very much a policy person. I think we share the ideal of we want to make lives better. How do you deal with people who just want attention?
So we keep highlighting the kinds of terrible, un-American, anti-people, anti-union policies that they keep promoting. And we just have to make sure that we're part of the voice that is telling, this is what you get with the Republicans. This is what they want for you. And it's not just the, all these social issues. I mean, of course, I care so much
about
reproductive rights. It's not just the culture war, though. It's the economic war that they are waging against everyday families.
And this is where we started. I think the labor movement is where there's the glue that's all this. And I was having a conversation with someone recently here, and I said, look, the transgender issue is something that we dealt with in my workplace 30 years ago. It wasn't the end of humanity. We dealt with it. Ross went away, came back as Rosie. You know who cared? Nobody. Rosie had a job. Rosie got paid the same as Ross did, got the same benefits, the same health care, led her life. Everything was fine. I don't know why now this is the end of humanity, other than it's the outrage candy that is being fed down the throats.
Here's an example. So first of all, I'm the proud grandmother of a transgender young man. He's doing great. He's teaching school.
And good for him.
He's wonderful. He's great. But they want to say that the danger to women is in women's sports, where transgender women are going to take over and ruin sports because they're transgender and they're really men. You know what? It's not even a thing. You can count on fingers and toes, maybe not even toes, the number of transgender women in sports. If these people want to help women in sports, they should help women in sports, because women have been underpaid in sports, underrecognized in sports, undersupported in sports. Women.
It's kind of amazing. Women. It's kind of amazing how many people now care about women's sports. I mean, it really is kind of amazing that the right now cares.
The right only cares, though, on this because of this trans jam.
This is where I'm at. It's because it's divisive. It gets us talking about other things while we're getting robbed blind. Because, it comes back to the economy. It comes back to the fact that wages have been stagnant for 30 years, 40 years, and families are struggling. So the last line of questioning I've got for you, because you look around this conference here, you look at all the energy and the activity and what people are doing. What's the marching order out of this? Because I keep saying, look, if this doesn't turn into people going and voting and engaging with other people to get out and vote and start winning some ballot boxes, none of this matters.
They're going to take your rights away, including your right to vote. We have to vote. You have to vote. If you care about any of these issues, and, you know, maybe you do care about the environment and if your kids are going to breathe clean air ever again, you know, it is time for everyone to say, my right to vote, I have to take advantage of that. I'm going to vote.
You got to fight for it, and you got to demand it. Nothing's given. And I think we've got to go back to my grandparents' era generation thought. Nothing's given. Everything's demanded. There are no benevolent dictators. They're only people that we hold accountable. But Representative Schakowsky, as always, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Good stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Look forward to talking to you again
real
soon.
Appreciate it. I look forward to that.
Fabulous. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break back here from Chicago. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day 50,000 lumber workers across the Pacific Northwest participated in an industry-wide strike called by the Industrial Workers of the World. The IWW had been organizing loggers for years around wages, hours, working conditions, and camp sanitation. The IWW began building for the strike in the aftermath of the Everett Massacre the previous fall. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn started touring camps in Idaho. By March, the Wobblies established Local 500 of the Lumber Workers Industrial Union in Spokane to organize across the region. In his book, Emperor of Timber, historian Eric Loomis details the chronology of events that led to the momentous walkout. In Idaho, loggers began walking off the job in April when demands for improved bunkhouses and food, higher wages, and the 8-hour day were refused. The strike spread to Washington State, the rest of Idaho, and into Montana and Oregon. Loomis notes that by August, they made employers feel their wrath. The strike cut production by over 80% and threatened war material. Infuriated timber bosses demanded federal troops be sent in to crush the strike and IWW leaders be prosecuted for treason and sabotage. Raids and arrests were orchestrated throughout the Pacific Northwest, and the strike began to stall. After 10 weeks, the IWW called off the strike, but instructed workers to quit work after 8 hours. They continued to lead sanitation-related job actions that would substantially change conditions for the better.
50,000 lumberjacks, 50,000 packs, 50,000 dirty rolls of blankets on their backs, 50,000 minds made up to strike and strike like men.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
The political extremists demanding that government control every woman's personal reproductive decisions claim that they are pro-life, but that's a rhetorical fraud. Look at their overall policy agenda, and you will see that they are merely pro-birth. After that, adios, baby, good luck. They consistently join Republican lawmakers to kill public programs that deliver essential real-life needs to babies after they're born. Consider child care, a fundamental need in any society, yet the leaders of our rich, sophisticated nation that supposedly treasures family, work, and children have created a mingy system that literally is a crying shame, revealing that our society deliberately does not care for children. Here's reality for you. 98% of American workers are better paid than those we entrust to care for our children. Working at a nail salon, loading boxes at an Amazon warehouse, flipping burgers at McDonald's are jobs given more pay and respect than most child care jobs. This is not just a poor people's problem. For the lack of child care availability, affordability, and quality is a looming crisis for a majority of American families. Nonetheless, Republicans, enabled by corporate Democrat Joe Manchin, recently killed funding for a program to both raise worker pay and lower the prices families are charged. Such care is too expensive, squawked the same lawmakers who routinely dole out billions in welfare to corporate profiteers. But wait, the GOP has come up with a genius, low-cost solution. Relax safety and educational requirements for child care centers, as Iowa and Montana have already done, allowing 16-year-olds to provide care for up to 15 children each. This is Jim Hightower saying, to support life, not just birth, join up with the First 5 Years Fund, ffyf.org.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, just before the break, I happened to see a story
you may remember we had talked about, and this is not Netroots Nation related. This has just got me really angry. It's one of these things that's really got me ticked off in this moment. But you remember us, you know, within the last week or so, talking about the 16-year-old who was killed at a sawmill. A 16-year-old working, you know, in the lumber industry, and we still don't know how this kid was killed. We just know that you know, he died while working in one of the most dangerous jobs in the country. I saw this story, and this is what drives me crazy about our mainstream corporate-controlled media. And it's something that I'll tell you, quite frankly, I'm not surprised by. You know, because understand, you know, our mainstream corporate controlled media, they sure love to, you know, they love a feel good story. They love a happy ending, if you will, and not the kind that Bob Kraft got down in Florida. But evidently this kid, this 16-year-old who was working in a Wisconsin sawmill, evidently, according to CBS News, you know, out of tragedy came something positive. We're going to take something positive from this child's death, because this 16-year-old boy who was killed, he saved multiple people's lives, including his own mother's, because he was an organ donor. Did you hear what I said? He's an organ donor. This is the feel-good story. Never mind that a 16-year-old was trying to unjam this wood stacking machine. Never mind that at this wood company. Never mind that, and that the conveyor belt he was standing on caused him to be pinned in the machine. Never mind that. It's just so. It's just so helpful that, you know, his death was fortuitous, because according to this kid's father, you know, lucky enough, his mom was a perfect match for his liver. And, you know, as I'm reading through this story, my mind is going to this place. You know, I'm a parent. I've got three kids, and I'm going, you know, I don't know. Is that how I want to get my liver? Now, look, nothing against the mother. You know, I wish her the best. But this isn't how this game's supposed to work. That's not how this is supposed to happen. And we're supposed to have a state that protect workers, young workers, children from being killed in dangerous jobs. It's supposed to be something better than this. And I know, Rick, you gotta, you know, when you're a kid, you gotta learn the value of a dollar. Yeah, not in dangerous condition jobs. This is the part that just sent me completely off the deep end. Because look, yeah, there's a positive. This kid was an organ donor, and I'm going, okay, 16, making that choice, good on you, I guess. But is this the story? The story should be a 16-year-old kid died because he was working in a dangerous job, and we have such lax enforcement, such lax laws, and getting worse, the other side of this, and this is the part that I'm just stuck on. The other side of this is you've got states that are actively working to put kids back in the workforce in dangerous conditions. Look, they're going to get there soon enough. But these years are supposed to be about education. These years are supposed to be about being a better, getting to be a better citizen, a better person, all this. And I know work does that. But in jobs that you're competing with adults for, and understand, a 16-year-old brain does not think of dangerous conditions. That kid, I guarantee you, did not look at that conveyor belt the way I would, or any of the people who had worked around it before. And this is where my frustration comes in, because, you know, when we did the story about, you know, kids in Iowa being able to go work in the slaughterhouses and clean the machines, I had people say, well, you know, I did things like that when I was a kid. And my response was that right? Did you get hurt? And a lot of people say, well, yeah, it made me tougher. I go, but should you have been in that situation? I know we like to look back and go, you know what? Didn't kill us, made us stronger. I do it all the time. You know, I grew up in a pretty much a war zone. So, I lived through this. I lived through that. I've seen this. I've seen virtually everything. But do I want my kids to see that? And the answer is hell no. And no parent does. I guarantee you this kid's mother doesn't. So to have a media structure that goes, no, this is a feel-good story. I got to tell you, it just makes me nuts. But I want to hear your thoughts. You know, what do you think about this? Tell me, because I want to hear. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I had to get that off my chest. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Patty Vasquez is going to be here. She's the afternoon drive host on WCPT AM 820, one of our affiliates here in Chicago. And I got to tell you, I love Patty. She is fantastic. So you're not going to want to miss this. Stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1944. A crew of mostly black soldiers were loading munitions onto ships at the Port Chicago Naval Magazine in California, northeast of Oakland. 320 soldiers were killed by a munitions explosion that wounded another 390 people. Troops were segregated. Black enlisted men were often given the worst and most dangerous non-combat jobs. All of the munition loaders at Port Chicago were African American. Every officer was white. The sailors were not given proper training in the loading of ammunition. The idea of loading munitions scared the soldiers. The officers lied and said the job was safe and that the weapons could not explode. They were wrong. The explosion caused a giant fireball that killed everyone on the ship and on the pier. The explosion could be heard 200 miles away. Of the 320 people killed, 202 were black. Only 51 bodies could be identified. Ordinarily, soldiers traumatized by the death of fellow soldiers were given 30 days leave. None of the black soldiers, not even those who were hospitalized, got leave. All of the white officers did. Surviving soldiers refused to load munitions. For that, they were arrested. 40 were charged with mutiny. The rest of the soldiers were also punished. They were sent to the Pacific Theater, forced to do menial duty. Many received bad conduct discharges at the end of the war, making them ineligible for military benefits. Those charged with mutiny were sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. When World War II ended, the imprisoned soldiers' sentences were reduced to 2 years. And in 1999, President Bill Clinton pardoned one of the survivors, 79-year-old Freddie Meeks. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So welcome back to Chicago here at Netroots Nation. And one of the things I was really happy about this conference being in Chicago is the opportunity to do a little work with our partner here in Chicago, WCPT, one of the affiliates that carries our program. And thank you to the good folks at WCPT for carrying the program. But also, more importantly, man, I get to talk to some of the people who are on the station who do incredible work. And one of those folks sitting down with me today is Patty Vasquez. She's the afternoon drive host on WCPT. You should never miss her show, ever, if you're in Chicago. Patty, thanks for sitting down with us.
I am so thrilled. I know I saw you yesterday, like, walk by. We had a lot of things going on, so it's great to sit down with you today. Thank you for having me.
No, it's been very good. I'm busy. I like being busy.
Sure.
And you get to talk to a bunch of people that, all in one space and finally see them.
Yes.
It's one thing. We do a lot of phone stuff. We do a lot of Zoom stuff. But to actually sit in the same space, and so you can reach out and smack them if you have to.
Correct. I am, but I'm sitting far enough from you. I'm with
no, I'm worried about you smacking me.
It's not going to happen.
So how you been?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. Yesterday, I would say, was a little bit nicer because it was a little breeze. Today, right. It's a little hot. But I just came from our SAG-AFTRA union offices. I was trained as a strike captain today.
That's what I like to hear.
So I'm very excited to be involved.
Yeah. So when we walk in the line together?
We are walking. Well, I probably should wait for the national announcement from SAG-AFTRA for the schedule. So I will. I can send you a message because I apologize. I'm glad to see you, too, because you had messaged me when we were doing one one of the labor panels and wanted me on ahead of time. And I'm like, please text me next time because I don't always get these emails. So please don't hesitate to use that phone number I shared.
I will certainly do. No, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's about supporting each other. And
yes.
If you're on the picket line, I'm going to be there with you.
And that's really the encouraging and wonderful thing this time around. I was not a part of the union when we went on strike in 2000. I joined a year later. And I am hearing so many great things from our labor leaders in Chicago. When we picketed with the WGA last month, we had plumbers and engineers. We had, you know, a lot of the, like, Teamsters were out there saying, we stand with you. And that is a new energy that I think has really buoyed a lot of us, has lent itself to the energy of this movement. I think this whole summer is going to be labor summer. I don't know if you're seeing these memes. Hot labor summer, baby.
Well, it's about damn time.
Right?
You know,
yeah, we're going to shut it all down.
It is about time. Look, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I think it was predictable. I mean, people, you know, internalized, you know, frontline hero, essential, yep, all of that kind of stuff, you know, going out and putting themselves in peril and still getting screwed in the workplace and not yeah, being paid reasonably, and with inflation. You know, of course people are ticked off.
Yes. And
we should be.
As we should be. And what people enjoyed a lot during the lockdown were their streaming services, right? You binge watched, you know, whatever, The Walking Dead, whatever, or watched movies that you might not have otherwise paid any attention to. You're like, oh, what's this movie? I really enjoyed this. Well, that was created by an incredible mind, a writer who sat down and put their passions on the page, by the actors, but also the crew. I mean, the countless members of the crew, from makeup and props to the sound engineers, to the people who build the sets, the carpenters that are on the sets. There's so many people involved in creating that world. And those streaming studios are making billions of dollars and crying victim. I received a 2-cent check last week. 2 cents I received for residual for a performance that I wrote and performed on Amazon Prime Video. So, whoa.
Yes. So hold on. Wait. Yeah. Walk me through this 2 cents.
Yeah.
Couldn't they just send you the stamp?
Thank you. The paper, the ink, the envelope, everything. The stamp was, I can't do the math, of 2 cents out
of. It's like a buck.
Yeah.
I mean, so you got.
Come on.
And they spent $1 to send you 2 cents.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And they're complaining over.
Yeah. What we're asking for equity. We're asking for what we're worth. But we're also asking about the way we have to sign contracts about our likenesses used in artificial intelligence, right? Right now, they will scan background actors, right? And just use that over, they'll use it over and over again, CGI it. And so now you're eliminating that portion of the industry where people, like, maybe it's $100, $200 a day to be an extra. That's how I started in the 90s. And they also want to do that with, if you ever saw New Hope with Carrie Fisher, you know, they CG'd her face. They can use our image, our bodies, the way we move, the way we talk in perpetuity without ever giving us compensation. And I want three things: consent for how my image is used, compensation for work, for whether it's my art or my image, and I want credit. I want credit for what the work I've done.
Yeah, I just saw a lawsuit. I don't know much about it at this moment, but Sarah Silverman and someone else are suing. I think it's ChatGPT.
Okay.
Because of copyright infringement, because, you know, is this AI bot or whatever, is this creating new material, or is it just, you know, plagiarizing what others have done without giving credit for it?
Exactly.
I mean, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, because, you know, I had this conversation last night over dinner, and the person was telling me, well, you know, these streaming services are new. There's not a lot of money there. They're just trying to compete. So we should start incrementally. And I'm going, no, I think there's a lot more to this. So the way you laid it out, this is a dire moment. This is a ride or die moment.
It is. Because the way performers and writers were compensated before, you know, a season on a TV show might have 22 episodes, right? And then they rebroadcast that, and networks would sell it off, and we would get some of that money. But now streaming, it's not a per play. It's obviously in perpetuity. Someone clicks on it, they want to watch it. I get it. I enjoy doing that too. But that's a product that someone created, and
shouldn't
they're not being compensated.
Shouldn't it be per play? I mean, when you download podcasts, there are ads in there and there's revenue that comes out of that.
Sure.
These streaming services, shouldn't they be paying per?
Sure.
When I click on, you know, watching Breaking Bad or whatever I'm going to watch, shouldn't a portion of that view come out of, I mean, something? Should there be some kind of...
You would imagine. Like I said, that 2 cents I got was for a 15-minute set that I did, or maybe it was like 12 minutes, a set that I did, all my own original material. I performed it, you know, and I get 2 cents for
what. Did you frame it?
Did I frame the check? I didn't. It's like going to the bank would cost me more in gas money. You know, I mean, just using my phone, the battery usage to take a picture of it would be more labor than the 2 cents I'm getting.
I think you could make a comedy bit out of that and make more off of it.
There's actually a bar in Los Angeles called Residuals. And if you bring in a check that's less than like $4, you get a free drink. Yeah. Isn't that great? Actually, I'm going to LA this weekend. I'm going to bring my 2 cent check, and it will be worth more there than it is anywhere else.
See, now I would take that to Springfield, right? Capital here.
Yeah.
And I say, here, I'm giving you my 2 cents, and then I would lay into them.
That's a great. Well, they will tell you that I have done that both here and there. So that,
and that's why people love you here in Chicago.
That was one of my favorite expressions on people's faces, whether it's people I've run against or if I've gone down in Springfield. This look on their face, like, oh God, she's here again. It's one of my favorite. Yeah, be that person. Be the person
always
that rocks the boat. That's,
absolutely.
I've never seen a boat I haven't wanted to stand up in.
Really?
Oh yeah. Rock that boat. You rock that boat. That's what we do. We're boat rockers.
That's it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Patty Vasquez. She's the afternoon host here on WCPT AM 820. Make sure you check out the work that she does. Incredible. And I'm hoping they're compensating you over there and not stealing your likeness. Because this is our gig.
Yeah.
Can be. Did you see that thing out west where the one disc jockey woman, she has an AI version of herself.
Oh, no.
That, you know, so they're already doing this. Yeah. They're already replacing us with AI. This person was like, oh, isn't this great? There's an AI version of me. And I'm going, no, this is bad.
No, that's horrifying. That's not great. No. That's what we're battling.
And it sounded just like her.
Well, yeah, and that's what they can do. There's apparently they went to Congress and they played several politicians' AI generated speeches that they had never done, and that might be the way we get through to them. Things that they like, you know, you could have a Republican saying he supports birth control and transgender care, and that's a speech he never gave.
Or you could have, you know, Chuck Grassley coming out and transitioning.
Exactly. That's AI, baby.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is not a brave new good new world. This is bad. This is worse than all of the things that I imagined as a kid reading Ray Bradbury novels and all of that stuff. You know,
Fahrenheit 451 was so traumatizing for me in high school. I think that, look, there are elements, and I'm not sure what they are, but, you know, we're not saying that AI needs to be destroyed, but I remember when we started having websites and there was, like, this big boom for all these companies, and we never figured it out. Digital newspapers, radio, like, we were always playing catch-up.
Right
now, we need to make sure we know how we want this to work for everyone, right? And that is regulation. It just has to be.
And also union contracts. The fact that...
Yes.
And why isn't this the central message out of this? We're fighting the digital revolution so that you don't have to. This is the front lines of this. Why isn't that the message coming out of this?
I agree, and I will send that up the flagpole and wave that flag. And I know that they're trying. I know that if you follow a lot of the writers on Twitter, you know, or so any of the social media outlets, Threads now and Instagram, they are talking a lot about AI and about how their, you know, scripts, someone could just put in a storyline and just generate dialogue and have it be incredibly stone. You know, it's not. It has no creativity, has no breath in it, has no humanity in it. And that's what we are fighting for, art. But art is also labor, and people don't see that.
I'm not a Luddite yet.
Getting there?
No, but I'm not saying we smash the machines. But there's got to be a place where we exist.
Because there
was a study done, I think, 4 or 5 years ago that said within 20 years, half of the jobs we currently do will be wiped out by AI or robotics or something. Eventually, what do we do if, and look, I love convenience, I love ease. But what do we do?
Well, I think just even when we started realizing, when we tried calling our credit card company and we're like, operator, I want to talk to an operator. Number two.
You should ask my kids.
I said two, yes.
You should ask my kids how crazy I get when I got to talk to those damn things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great example of we're not talking to human beings anymore. And it just boggles the mind that we just keep giving it all away, whether it's our personal information, which is data, right? That's what we signed off on that. We need to be mindful of what we continue to do, and because we're already giving it away. Now we're headed to giving it all away for our kids, too.
And there's no claw on that back at this point.
No, I don't think there is.
And no. Yeah, I. Wow. now you've depressed me to know it. It's over. It's over.
That's the point of the work that you do, you know, raising the alarm bell about labor, having these conversations, making sure folks are informed. You know, we're not out here to change, like to make people think something. We're out here just to share the information, to have these stories. That's the great thing about radio is that it's intimate, right? Right. They can't replace us. They could try to, whether it's a DJ or whatever, but there isn't replacing our passion. There isn't replacing our perspective and our experience.
Yeah, but they're going to try
because
it's profitable. This is the problem. I mean, I go back to how are you going to make a living when AI is doing all this stuff? Yeah. Look, I've used some of this stuff, you know, some of the stuff, and it's scary good.
Yeah,
I know a lot of my writer friends. No, it's all crap. It's all I'm going. I don't know, man. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, but and that's, again, you know, people think that we're a fluff union, right? SAG-AFTRA is just a bunch of performers and artists and things like that. But it is interesting to hear you say that. You know, we're kind of at the forefront of talking about AI, and if we can elevate it, if we can, you know, really get the message out there of what we're fighting for is labor. And Fran Drescher did a great speech yesterday when she said this is happening across all labor. When CEOs and corporations put Wall Street and greed above the people who created the product, it's a dire time for everybody. And if you saw this too, the studios, the execs are saying, well, you know, we're willing to let them all suffer. People like writers losing their homes. You know, it's the evilness of the beast. But we're gonna have to do it. We'll stretch it out for months until they're starving and they're begging for us to give them whatever we offer. And isn't that comes down to labor?
It comes down to the classic, the war between capital and labor.
Yep.
That's not new. And this is where the hope is now. Now that you've put this out there, because I've known this, the companies are going to do what they're going to do to try and starve people back to work. How do we support your union? How do we support the writers? How do we support people to get them that one day longer?
I think showing up in support right now for the pickets, I think, you know, tweeting out, hey, I don't want to tell people that they should cancel their streaming services, but if you've been thinking about it, now's a good time to send a message to Netflix and Paramount, all those studios. Those are the dollars that we're fighting over, are the ones, because they don't share how many people subscribe. So we don't, there isn't really a number, you know, they're using shows. They will completely destroy a show and write it off as a tax write-off and hold those creators and those performers under contract so that they can't do other work in a certain time period because they want to use that show as a tax write-off. Right.
Wow.
So if you have a show that you loved on Netflix, it was canceled, it might have just been because they saw an opportunity to take a tax break. I'm sorry.
Now I'm canceling Netflix. That's it.
I maybe borrow it. I'm just saying.
No, I mean it's one of those things, man. That's the ultimate in backdoor.
Yeah. John Cusack tweeted about this too, that they've told him that one of his movies, I think it's Say Anything, has lost $44 million since they made it, even though it was a big hit that summer. Like, so they have all these, that's why he doesn't get more money for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No matter how much it's rented or streamed,
nothing. Again, I go back to this is why we need to tax these people out of existence.
Yeah, I'm saying that it's a tax. The whole idea, Ron Johnson yesterday said that he doesn't believe the wealthy should pay their fair share. Do they even hear the words that are coming out of their mouths?
Well, Mike Pence said the same thing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy. And this is why, again, you come to events like this here at Netroots Nation. So what experience have you had here? Is this your first one?
This is my first one. And I'll tell you, we had a great conversation with Nina Turner. We talked to some folks from the Trans Rally, which is a new organization here in Chicago, uplifting trans voices. We talked to State Senator Aaron Murphy from Minnesota, talking about the work that they've accomplished with just a simple majority in Minnesota. So what have you enjoyed? What have been your favorite moments?
We sat down with Keith Ellison. We talked a little bit. We had Randy Weingarten come by. We've had a bunch of people, you know, talking about the work that they're doing locally and how they're attempting to turn this into electoral victories. All this stuff is great, but it doesn't mean anything if it doesn't turn into people getting out and voting.
Yeah.
You don't have a Minnesota miracle without having a majority of people in those elected offices.
I agree.
You don't have what's going on in Michigan without having the majority. And this is and also understanding how important those down races are. You know, an attorney general's race is incredibly important.
Secretary of State.
Yeah,
you know?
All that stuff.
You know, we've banned book bans in Illinois.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So it and Aaron, Senator Murphy. Oh, I have to get going.
Yep, you got to go.
I got to go soon. All right. Well, I do want to say before I go, one of the things that impressed me with State Senator Aaron Murphy was what she learned from. They took big losses in Minnesota when they lost 25 Democratic seats about a decade ago, and she said that it was always she felt that it was because they would always go back on their values, that they would negotiate and not follow through on the promises that they had made, or whether it was gun violence or affordable housing. And she's like, we now stand, you know, rooted in our beliefs and full-throated on what we want to accomplish. And that's, I think, the message we need to get out to folks.
There you go. Yep. Patty Vasquez, appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
Great
it was so
stuff.
Great to hang out with you today.
You too.
Thank you. I think am I talking to you later, too?
Yep, you are. You can catch her later on.